Blog Talk Radio.
Locker Talk, which you're listening to the Bassapad Radio Network. I'm your host, Barry Barnes, founder, CEO of Locker-Report.com, where you will hear about tomorrow's NFL stars today, breaking down all the good old stuff in the NFL within the NFL. And again, I just want to say thanks for joining in. Thanks for tuning in. It's good to, for y'all guys to listen to me once again to put up with my NFL stuff. Although we normally talk about players, but last week I talked about the officiating and how I was going to carry on to talk about the officiating going forward towards 2018 season. Last week I had the pleasure and the opportunity, the privilege to be at the NFL front office for the 2018 NFL mini clinic officiating. So it was a pleasure to be there. I would say that NFL front office is almost like Fort Knox, I would say. You know, that's a well-put building with a lot of history of the NFL that's there. It's almost, you know, like a mini NFL Pro Football Hall of Fame in that Canton, Ohio field in there with, you know, the tons of pictures and paintings and history that's labeled on the walls, over from spanning from players and also the elevation of the game, you know, how everything has been changed over the decades. It's really an awesome place to go. I know a lot of people will not have the opportunity that I have to be there and to be a part of it at the capacity that I was at last week and times before in the past. So I definitely don't take it for granted every time I go. Now, today's show, we're going to talk about what was discussed at the mini clinic last week at the front office. Also had the pleasure opportunity to interview NFL senior vice president of officiating, Mr. Al Riveron. I had an interview with him last week, and I will play it after the first break. So please stay tuned for that. And I know the whole situation this week about the new policy on the anthem, the players standing for the anthem with the NFL had passed this week when they was in their spring meetings in Atlanta this week. I know it's been a touchy subject, as it should be. And although that's something that I definitely would touch on towards the end of the show, but right now I'm going to focus a lot on what the rule changes and how the officials had prepared themselves leading up, well, how the officials have prepared themselves for the meetings from last week and how it correlates with what they're going to do when they get to Dallas for the NFL officiating clinic, which will be the all and be all of their meetings right before the season starts. So I will talk about the difference between the officiating mini clinic and the mini clinic, which I'll dive into right now. The mini clinic is the clinic that they have every year. For the past couple of years, they had it in May. We used a different area this time. But the mini clinic is pretty much where the new rules have changed early in the year in March when the competition committee gets involved. And so what the officials do at this time with Riveron and his crew, this is when it's more of a collective meeting of sorts where they will review tons of video. And last week, to watch hundreds of videos of scenarios that happened on the field of play last year and some old clips and how they compared them to what they should expect to see in the upcoming year. So at the mini clinic, the officials pretty much have an opportunity to put their input on how to officiate a rule change. So the rule changes are already there. Last week when we were there, the main two rules that were not in stone, like the catch rule, which I will discuss a little bit, but they had to discuss this week at the spring meetings, was the kickoff rule and the helmet to helmet. And so they were the rule changes that the officials did not go over in the mini clinic, all because there was nothing locked in stone. But everything else from last week, what they were able to talk about and how to prepare for the to prepare themselves on how to officiate the new rule, that was the emphasis of last week with the officials. Our River Run, these guys get together to try to push forward to see how they're going to go about changing it. Then later in the year, in July, when we meet up in Dallas, that clinic is pretty much when everything is set in stone. That's the time when you have everything set, where the officials are on board with everything. The mini clinic is a time where personality could come out with the officials. When the clinic starts in July, when everything is set in stone, that's when all personal feelings and thoughts is thrown to the side and everybody is on one page. When I tell you that everyone is on one page and how focused the league is, along with their television partners, it's a machine like no other. It was really mind-blowing. It was an eye-opener for me, which actually gave me more of appreciation of the game and how they go about doing it. So that's primarily the two biggest things between the mini clinic and the clinic that the officials will have in July. Normally during a mini clinic, they will have to, the officials to do a workout. There, I would say combine, so to speak. We didn't have it last week, but the officials will have it in July. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. Then how well these guys are put together, how in shape they are, how disciplined they are. You know, we talk about the players and how disciplined and their workouts, and it's true, and they should be commended for it because they put a lot of hard work in. Ain't no question about that. But for the officials to be able to stay on top of their game physically, but most importantly, how these guys are really sharp in watching live time and watching what's going on the field with the naked eye of how fast this game is, for these guys to keep up with the fluent movement on the field is really remarkable. I've said it several times and even written in my pieces that you can go and check out at locker-report.com, how everyone cannot be an NFL official. It's so much that goes into it. There's so much discipline that goes into it. And last week I broke down their timeline. I talked about some other things. Went over the formation of the new kick rule last week. And so when we come back from this mini break we have, we'll bring in the interview with Mr. Riveron and then talk about some of the points of emphasis that we talked about last week and then carrying on. You're listening to Locker Talk. You can shoot me a message anytime during the show. You can email me at BarryBarnes@locker-report.com or my Twitter handle @locker_report or on Facebook at LockerReport.com. You're listening to Locker Talk on the Master Pad Radio Network.
I'm sitting here with the NFL Vice President of Officiating, Mr. Al Riveron. How you doing today, sir?
I'm good, babe. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine. Just want to say that just watching you the last couple of years, how you were behind the scenes but always was there. And when you got the title that you currently have now, which you earned for years, compared to last year and this year moving forward, what has been the change in your life personally and professionally?
Well, let's start with personally. Obviously, it's a it's more of a 24/7 job year round.
Yeah.
Where before, basically, I was very involved with the officials, with the supervisors, and the coaching aspect of it. But now it takes on another perspective where you're dealing with your internal, the people here, your colleagues from the league, because officiating touches all aspects of the game.
Mm-hmm.
We are the front line. We're there on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
It touches every single department here in the league. We are very fortunate to have the support of all departments here in the league. But again, the officiating part of it, since before I was not sitting in this chair, I was not privy to how much other people admire, respect, and really back up the officiating part of it. And therefore, it's a combination of things that we do in officiating, and we need that support, and we need other people, because if not, we're not successful.
Right.
So I guess on the professional part of it is the mixing and the great interrelationships that I've established over the years that now we can build upon with the people within the building to allow us to really get better and move forward.
It sounds good. Hey, that's I totally understand that. The game of football is evolving, you know, from the coaches, how smart they are, and how the players are much faster and much stronger. And you guys have to compete against that, so to speak, and making sure that knowing that they're going to try to game plan against you guys and they understand the rule book. Since everyone is evolving, how is the officiating crew evolving with them?
Well, the game, Barry, as you know, changes on a yearly basis.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to stay ahead of the game. So therefore, one of my responsibilities, along with our staff, is to make sure that we are current and up to date on trends,
mm-hmm.
tendencies. I mean, clubs scout each other.
Mm-hmm.
We scout clubs.
Right.
We scout tendencies. They scout us.
Mm-hmm.
They know our tendencies. Now, we shouldn't be any different from week to week,
right.
But still, they keep up on certain tendencies and certain things that go on throughout the year. And if we're doing our job when we meet during the week,
mm-hmm.
we have to make sure that we look forward to Sunday's game. Therefore,
mm-hmm.
we can't dwell on what happened last week.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we learn from what happened last week,
right.
And we try to correct situations of what happened last week,
mm-hmm.
but we've got to put it behind us quickly, Monday or Tuesday, and then start looking to next Sunday. We've got to be ready to go for what is presented to us for the next two teams on Sunday. And that means we have to scout them.
Right.
That means we have to know personnel.
Mm-hmm.
That means we have to know tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
Because our goal is to be at the position that will allow us to make the right decision all of the time. And if you don't study, if you don't prepare, you won't be able to do that for Sunday.
Right. And one last question.
Mm-hmm.
If you had the opportunity to talk to all the football fans out there about officiating, what are some of the things, what would you say to the fans and to the media out there that look at officiating in a negative sense? If you had the opportunity to talk to them, what would you tell them and express to them what officiating is all about?
Well, I don't think it's that they look at it in a negative sense. You have to understand that our league being the best league in the world,
mm-hmm.
people have a certain passion, and that's why we are all very fortunate, very lucky to be part of this league because of the passion that surrounds our league.
Mm-hmm.
We have the best fans in the world, and because of that, when things don't go their way for their particular club,
mm-hmm.
then sometimes we don't see eye to eye. However, I look at it as we're the managers of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Our job is to make sure no one gets an advantage because they're not following the rules.
Right.
We are the integrity of the game.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that we have to make sure it's our job that the game is played at the highest level,
mm-hmm.
within the rules and
right.
professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
So we're the managers of the game, and our job is to keep the game flowing smoothly,
mm-hmm.
to make sure that we don't insert ourselves
mm-hmm.
in a negative way,
mm-hmm.
and take away from the entertainment value of the game.
Right. Thanks a lot, Mr. Riveron. I appreciate it.
You got it.
You got it. All right.
All right. That was Mr. Riveron, the interview I had with him last week at the NFL front office and headquarters in New York. Thanks for listening. This is Locker Talk on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network. He have a nice office, by the way. Just throw that out there. But to be around Al in this setting, you know, was definitely refreshing. And I would say that to be around that core group and see how the officials, even in between meetings that we attended, I mean, that they had, you still saw the officials still talking about the game, talking about certain plays. Even on that spare time in between breaks, some of the officials are still going to will go into the room to review video of certain plays just to have the right context and talk about it over and over. When I tell you that, the officiating lifestyle, it really is a lifestyle. And these guys really are in tune to it, not saying that they are unbalanced and they don't worry about anything else that's going on in the world and life, but it means so much to them to make sure that the game is right. And I had one official who was actually a scout, Mr. Dave Wyatt. He had told me that when an official feels though they had called the right game, the perfect game, they need to stop because there's no such thing as the perfect game being called. And he emphasized that clearly to me. Now, Al, although he have a great sense of humor, it was a time when he was talking to the new hires. So the NFL had actually hired 8 more officials this year. And so when he went into the room to have the meeting with them, he came in, you know, telling a lot of jokes. It was that the intensity was already in the room. And then he just came out and said that your life is going to change. And he was basically talking about how people are going to look at these new officials, whether from spanning from their families to their friends and how they viewed in the public. And so it's going to be a point where everybody think that you know everything about all sports, especially in the NFL. Even when it comes down to the draft, you know, this is the type of expectation that he wants to lay out to them and to let them know that, number one, family is first. Have to put your family first, then that, so that means that you won't have to get up around 2 or 1 o'clock in the morning just to review tape because there's no excuse for time. He needs the officials to be ready on Sunday. They don't have to worry about anything, false travel, expenses, their uniform. Just focus on your family and on your job. So when everyone come together collectively on that Saturday or the day before that game, that everybody is on the same page. And so when kickoff comes, they can move forward. Now, another thing that one of the biggest things they had talked about a lot was the points of emphasis. And the points of emphasis is pretty much what the league officiating lay out as something that's going to be targeted as a certain there's something that's targeted that they want to make sure they clear on that is pretty much on their top page, the primary page that they have to watch out for and have to actually anticipate certain situations happening. Now, like, for instance, one of the points of emphasis they talked about a great deal was illegal contact. Illegal contact has dropped as far as being called the previous 2 years, and it's not because they're not calling the illegal contact. It's just that the players are getting better, not committing that particular foul, and the officials are still on top of it. So there's more of a collective thing. When I say that it's a collective situation for us with the league and with the team, just a couple of weeks ago in May, many of the league's coaches, special team coaches, and coaches alike came to the headquarters and talked about the new kickoff rule. And when they talked about the new kickoff rule, it was very interesting. I'm going to go back from this break, and I'm going to come back, and I'm going to tell you what they talked about and how the coaches in the league come together with the officials to actually help lay out the rules. Because everyone thinks that the officiating crew, that Al Rivera, all these guys are making the rules. Actually, you'll be surprised of the individuals that's behind and creating the rules. You're listening to Locker Talk on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network. And we're back at Locker Talk on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network. I'm your host, Barry Barnes, founder and CEO of Locker-Report.com. And you can send me a message anytime through my email, through BarryBarnes@locker-report.com, or on my Twitter handle at locker_report. Now, while just right before break, I talked about who are involved, who the parties that's involved in creating rules. Majority of the time, and matter of fact, all the time, the coaches in the league, the competition committee, they are the ones that come together and create the rules. Al Riveron and his staff will have these coaches and special team coaches come to the front office and talk about what they would like, what they want to see on the field. And as soon as the coaches, you know, talk about what they want called and how they want to go about doing it, that's what they go for. And the most important thing that's on Al's table and officiating crew is safety. Safety, safety, safety. And that's the part that he primarily had preached all last week. And illegal contact is one of those, matter of fact, all the points of emphasis and all the rules is predicated to safety. And I talked about the legal contact. Players are playing much better within the rules. So the officials, not like they overlook far as a drop in the number from the previous 2 years, but everyone collectively is working together to try to resolve that and make the game safer and better. Also, they focus on the defense offensive side unimpeded. That means that when you're edge rusher or any one of the defensive line, if they get off the ball quick and get around quick enough before the ball is snapped, they want them to kill that play right away. Getting off, getting towards the quarterback to hit him is unfortunately is never really a good situation. So to eliminate that, as soon as that defensive player come off the edge or get around the line of scrimmage before that ball snap, I tell you that's something they're going to kill the play on right away because, again, that promotes safety so that no one will get injured. Okay, the body weight on the quarterback, that was another topic they talked about. They show different scenarios of defensive players when they sack the quarterback, how they did not put their entire body weight on top of them. Although that was something that was done, you know, throughout football for the longest time. And you also have to recognize that, you know, the quarterback is the most important asset on the team. And as soon as fans and football gurus alike can recognize and separate the player from the asset, players are more of an asset now. And it's more the business side of the game. So that's why certain positions and certain rules are also in place to help protect that asset. But most importantly, it helped keep the players safe. And so if a player just apply all that weight on them and it's evident, that's going to be something that's going to be a foul and something's going to be flagged. They show many, many, several examples of how players turned their bodies to the side and not put their entire weight on top of quarterbacks because you don't want to see a quarterback go down on an insignificant, unfortunate injury, like having somebody's weight piled up on top of them. Now, whistles, there's something they're going to fight with pile-ups. If they see a player, forward, motion, progress, stop, they're going to blow the whistle right away, especially they know that the player is not moving no more. And also they want to eliminate players jumping on top of the piles when you know, the players are on the ground, whether they're trying to cover a fumble, they want to eliminate that. They actually, you know, took care of that a couple of years ago with that rule, and that's why you see less pileups. But what they don't want to see is, you know, pileups when a player is running and they want to stop that play right away because the player happened to fall down with all those bodies, that could lead into an unfortunate injury. And so that's another part of safety you want to watch out for. And also they talked about the protection of the snapper. Now, basically on a field goal attempt or extra point, the center is to not be touched at all. And they don't want a helmet over top of the center. So when they snap the ball, they have enough time to lift their head up to protect themselves. But when we know that teams trying to get to the kicker, trying to stop the field goal, they're going to be very forceful. And the person that's vulnerable to and subject to an injury much quicker on that offensive line is that center because his head is down. So they want to make sure the defensive players are not over top of their heads so they will not actually, you know, injure them, you know, injure that center before he get a chance to actually protect himself. One of the things they talked about was the catch rule. And the catch rule is going to go through three steps, A, B, and C. First, the player has to have control. Number two, the player actually have to make a football move, whether if they lunging the ball across the goal line, and also they or if they have any body part that will hit the ground. And they also have a three-step process. And the three-step process pretty much help protect a player if they in a situation like this. I'm going to try to paint the best examples I possibly can. That if a player is – if a receiver is trying to catch the ball and they run in towards the sideline to make the pass, if the ball hit their hand and although they don't have control and it rattles around a little bit and they took their first two steps, before they take that third step, whether it's still inbounds or out of bounds, at that point on that third step, if they have control and they also made that football move, they're going to rule that as a catch because they want to make sure they give that player that time while they're running to actually have control to allow that receiver to make a catch. Because a lot of times a ball is not going to always hit their hand, they're going to snatch it out of the air. Sometimes it takes some movement to actually get their control, and the league don't want to penalize a player for trying to make a play. So that third step, that's what that third step is going to give them, that opportunity that before they take that third step, if they have control of that ball and they made that football move, it's pretty much going to the ground at the same time, and they have control, that's going to be a catch. Now, if it's on a if it's a tap situation, now this is where it gets a little dicey, that if the player's feet is right near the out of bounds and they on their toes and it's tap, that's the only time when you see the pass, if it's caught, where the surviving the ground comes into play. Right now, the surviving the ground situation is eliminated, whether if a player is crossing the 50-yard line or going to the end zone, the surviving the ground part is eliminated. Only time when that come into play, if it's a tap situation where they have to catch their ball quickly before they step out of bounds, and if they can hold their ball in and hit the ground and keep the ball in control, that's going to be a catch. But if they bumble it, if they fumble it and the ball spins around or move around or hit the ground, since he's out of bounds, they're going to label that play as incomplete. Now, before we close out, I know I talked about, you know, my short take on the national anthem, what the league owners have voted for, the players, if they were to kneel on the field, not the league, but the team can fine the players for kneeling on the field. So if they do not want to participate in the national anthem, they have to stay inside the locker room. And that goes across the board for any NFL affiliate or team, or anyone associated with the NFL, they have to stand. Now, the part that makes it very unfortunate is that it kills, and we're still worrying about and looking at the reason for the protest in the negative, in the wrong tense, because it's all about police brutality and equality in the country. It has nothing to do against the flag. But in my sense, and when I look at far as the players, if the players did not kneel from this point on, and although that whole ruling is wrong, for me, it's not on the players to continue to carry that burden. It really falls down on us as well. You know, us as parents, we have to teach our kids and lead them in a way they have to be. With the Rodney King beating in Los Angeles in the early 1990s, that at that point in time, our parents then should have been talking to our kids, letting the kids know that in order for us to really make a change, put the emphasis on, they should have told us as children to work on trying to become something in society to help change the narrative, to put us in a situation where we can actually have power and control to change certain laws, to make sure that certain that our lifestyles and the culture of this country would change if all the kids back then from the 90s, over 20 years ago, if we had our mindset in a proper and appropriate way, things probably a little different now. But since that's not the case, and for us as African Americans, when we see stuff that goes on, and instead of us coming together saying this is what we should do and get our household right, get our communities together, teach our kids what to do, how to influence them, so when it's time for them to to become young men and young women in society, where they will have a place in society to have control and to make the rule changes that the previous regime made. That's where we can actually make that change. I think now it comes down to parents. It comes to how we are in our communities, little by little, brick by brick. That's when we start to see the change. Until we get to that point where we don't make our change with ourselves and also influence our kids the right way, it's going to continue. And instead of getting mad and rebel because of what rule changes and the wrong and the unjust ruling for our cops in place for getting away with manslaughter and getting away with murder, instead of us getting upset and rebel, just turn that focus and start building right now so that our kids 20 years from now will be in position of change. Thanks for listening to Locker Talk. I'm your host, Barry Barnes. Shoot me a message anytime at LockerReport.com, Barry at LockerReport-Report.com, or on Twitter at Locker_Report. Thanks for listening to Locker Talk. Look forward to talking to you next week. Everyone stay blessed and enjoy Memorial Holiday weekend. Goodbye.
Recession, depression, and unemployment. This song is for you.
Today's a new day, but there is no sunshine. Nothing but clouds, and it's dark in my heart, and it feels like a cold night. Today's a new day.
With you.
I almost gave up, but a power that I can't explain fell from heaven like a shower.
When I think how much better I'm gonna be when this is over.
I want you to be happy, but then you gotta have something happen. I want you to have joy, cause can't nobody take that from you. I see you, my.
Thank you. So lonely.